So again, moving beyond whether you can get it paid for, in terms of just putting that aside, in terms of what might be optimal, Johanna, any thoughts about that? I mean, I kind of think a little bit, again, this idea of, for example, with breast cancer, the 21 gene recurrence score Oncotype, there are multiple genomic assays used in that situation, but the 21 gene assay was by far utilized more commonly, and part of that is they have stronger data. They put out a lot of data, they're in the academic sphere. Is that something that's part of the, how do you factor? Again, putting aside whether you get it paid for, is it advantageous to use one or another of these either tissue-based assays or liquid assays?
Well, I think part of it is what results you're looking for. So for some of those Oncotype assays, you're looking for a risk of recurrence. Should I use chemotherapy? Should I not use chemotherapy? And these are different decision points. And I think that that's one set of tests. And the other set of profiling tests is, what am I going to do with it? And is it going to help me decide between standard therapies, or is it going to be something where, again, we're looking for that needle in the haystack and we're going to say, hey, would this patient potentially be matched to a different FDA-approved targeted therapy that I might want to try? And I think with some of the data that Andy just presented, which suggested that if you match a patient's profile to the type of treatment that that patient's going to get, will that result in better outcomes? And I think you have to take that very much with a grain of salt, because we've seen profiles where you can use a treatment and almost tumor agnostically, the patient's likely going to receive benefit, like microsatellite instability, like NTRK fusions. But then we have other ones where it's not so clear-cut. PARP and BRCA is a very, very interesting, the pancreas data is very different than the ovarian data. And there's still a lot of debate within the pancreas community about how much benefit olaparib will give a patient with pancreas cancer as opposed to other types of tumors. PIK3 mutations, another one that's out there where very common mutation in colon cancer, have we really seen efficacy of PIK3 inhibitors in patients with colon cancer? It's been very, very mixed. So I think you have to really consider before taking an FDA-approved targeted agent and giving it to your patient who has a mutation that you might pick up on one of these assays, really what the data is that's out there about using that particular targeted agent in that particular tumor type.
I think there is this fundamental issue here of, Johanna saying the provider needs to know the data for using a particular drug and a particular mutation. How do they get that data? I mean, if you look at a foundation report, you see there'll be a particular mutation and there'll be some curated potential therapies, but there's no differentiation of this one's got an 80% response rate and this one's got a 10%. It's just a list. Is there a way to get that information for the average provider to look at a foundation report or a Guardant or anything else and say, this is something I should act on and this is not? Because right now,
so I think
they can't get
that's the
that.
Job of the molecular tumor board. I mean, to be honest with you, I get a foundation report, it's 35 pages. I look at page one, page two, and I throw away the rest.
Yeah.
The matching trials is completely useless.
Yeah.
It's uniformly useless. First of all, because they include trials that are not relevant, or they include, let's say, 15 PARP inhibitor trials. And then you're looking down this list, which one should I choose? They're all reasonable. So I think that's where having a molecular tumor board where you can have, molecular pathologists, clinicians with genetic knowledge, germline clinic people there, and then to give that clinician a recommendation and ordering the likelihood of benefit. Like that case we saw in the beginning, the first thing I would do for that patient is I would try pembro, because it looks like he's MSI high. The second thing might be to target the ATM mutation. The third thing might be to target the IDH1 mutation, in that order, right? The clinician needs to know that if they start with an IDH1 inhibitor in a patient who's MSI high, they're wasting their time.
Right. But so at Hopkins, you have that. What about the oncologist in Peoria who just gets the report and doesn't have an academic center to back them up? How do you get that molecular tumor board information that he or she can actually use that? I mean, again, I think this is an unmet medical need. We're bringing in a test, and how you act on it is not clear at this
Yeah.
point.